Listening to the Locked On Broncos podcast, hosted by Cody Rourke, your daily Broncos podcast.
What's up, Broncos country? Welcome back into a brand new episode of the show. Happy Thursday, all across Broncos country. From the South Stands to the end zone, you are Locked On Broncos, your daily Denver Broncos podcast here on the Locked On NFL Network, your team every day. Ladies and gentlemen, today's episode of the show is brought to you by our good friends over there at Pepsi, and thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever get to play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, and that is the League of Football Watchers. And this football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, as always, Cody Rourke, NFL analyst and Denver Broncos insider for the Locked On NFL Network, media talent over there, ProFootballNetwork.com, part of Pro Football Network Weekly over there with Benjamin Albright and Brett Yarris. We do it every single Tuesday at 4 p.m. Mountain Time for your listening pleasure as well. But ladies and gentlemen, it is Thursday, so you know what that means all across the Locked On NFL Network. It is Crossover Thursday. That means that we get to hear the expert insight from the team that the Denver Broncos will be playing this Sunday. And we're going to be joined a little bit later on by Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Dolphins. He's part of the Draft Network, does a phenomenal job over there. And we're going to be breaking down this Broncos-Dolphins matchup this Sunday. Empire Field, a mile high. What can the Broncos expect defensively from the Miami Dolphins? How aggressive they've been, how good they've been in both special teams and the defensive side of the ball. And what can the Broncos offense do against this defense? What can the Broncos defense expect from Tua Tagovailoa, the left-handed quarterback? We're going to talk about that all on today's jam-packed episode, Locked On Broncos. But first off, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hear from Broncos head coach Vic Fangio, who met with the media yesterday as the Broncos returned back to the practice field, the UC Health Training Center in Inglewood, Colorado, to prepare for the Miami Dolphins. We heard from Vic Fangio. He shed a lot of insight as to the injury process, where Drew Lock is currently at. We know that he was limited. He really didn't do too much in yesterday's practice for the Broncos, as he's dealing with that severe muscle bruise issue that he's got near his rib cage. And so it's going to be a situation that we continue to monitor all throughout this week. Brett Rypien yesterday got a majority of the first team practice reps for the Broncos offense, and he's going to be preparing against a very aggressive Miami Dolphins defense that loves to run a lot of man-to-man coverage with Xavier Howard, and you also have Byron Jones out there at the cornerback spots, which allow them to play lockdown coverage, to be able to send as much pressure. And it's been a good formula for Brian Flores and the Dolphins. So for Brett Rypien, he's going to have to, if he is the guy, he's going to have to obviously put together a clean game. But we're going to hear from Broncos head coach Vic Fangio, who shared his thoughts on Drew Lock and his injury status.
He's made good progress, you know, since Monday morning till Wednesday morning. We'll see how much he continues to make the progress throughout the week and see where he goes.
Vic Fangio also mentioned that a lot of it is up to Drew Lock, and if he feels like he can go out there and play, then more than likely he's going to be getting the start. But in case he's unable to go, they have to get Brett Rypien prepared to be able to play this Dolphins team when the Broncos have a home game this upcoming Sunday in Power Field at Mile High against a very formidable opponent from the AFC East. And the Dolphins are at a spot right now where they are actually contending for the AFC East division. They're almost catching in there with the Buffalo Bills, who've had their struggles as of late. So something to keep an eye on. But Vic Fangio is also asked about where he feels his level of comfortability is with Brett Rypien being in there at the quarterback position.
You know, I thought he handled the situation good. I didn't think he felt any pressure or the moment was too big for him. Thought he went out there and executed the offense. And I would expect that he would benefit from that, you know, if he is to play this week. I feel comfortable that Brett can do that, but Brett, like I said earlier, you know, Drew at best is going to be limited today. So I expect Brett to get a good bit of the reps today.
Whether it's Brett Rypien or Drew Locke or Jeff Driskel or Jeff Garcia, whoever's the quarterback for the Broncos this Sunday, they're going to have to take care of the football because the Broncos offensively have turned the ball over at a very, very high rate. They lead the league total interception, I believe 30th. Actually, it's not the league, but it's 30th. It's two spots from dead last in terms of interceptions and giveaways altogether. So against a very aggressive Miami Dolphins defense, here's what Vic Fangio said the Broncos offense has to emphasize this Sunday.
Yeah, we talked about that today, especially playing the Dolphins who excel in that area of taking it away on defense. So this will be a very important week for us to take care of the ball. And as you alluded to, we haven't done a good job of that in several games this season. And it's come back to hurt us.
And the Broncos this season are putting up more points all across the board offensively than they were last year, but the turnovers and the lack of success on the offensive side of the ball have been one of the most puzzling storylines of this Broncos football team here in the 2020 NFL season. We talked about it with fans in yesterday's show about what their concerning aspect was, is the fact that there's so much talent at the skill position level for the Broncos, it doesn't make much sense as to why they are struggling with being able to successfully be consistent with moving the ball downfield, not protecting the football, not getting the run game going. These are all things that are deciding factors, but it's going to be something the Broncos have to work on in these final seven games. It all starts this Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. One of the final things that Vic Fangio was asked was who his thoughts were about potential players for the Pro Bowl this year representing for the Denver Broncos, but the NFL Pro Bowl will not actually be played, but the recognition will still come forward. We all know it has been a popularity contest, but according to Vic Fangio, these are the players that he would select if he had a choice.
Obviously, being the coach of the team, I'm going to go overboard. But, you know, Bowles, Risner, obviously in the O-line are two guys that I think would deserve consideration. Glasgow, possibly, but he's missed a few these games. I think Shelby was playing very good. Obviously, he's going to miss three games. That always hurts a little bit. Bradley's doing good. I think Bryce is doing good. Both safeties, Kareem and Justin, are doing good. You know, both inside linebackers are playing good for us, AJ and Josie. So I believe all of those guys, and Brandon McManus, obviously, I think deserves strong consideration.
Now, it's highly unlikely that many Broncos players will get selected to the Pro Bowl. I mean, it's been very surprising the last couple of years that the actual recognition that Denver gets, various players that have deserved to go, they haven't gone. Von Miller's been really the one representative for Denver in the last couple of years, and even Chris Harris Jr., and they weren't necessarily when Chris Harris Jr. was having a strong year. It was really based on a popularity contest. Justin Simmons, I do believe, is deserving. Kareem Jackson, in my opinion, is playing at a Pro Bowl level right now, and if I had to really go and if I had to choose one guy in the Broncos defensively, I think deserves the most recognition for being a Pro Bowl athlete this year, it would definitely be Bryce Callahan. He has been absolutely stellar for the Broncos this year. He was actually the focus of our Denver Broncos film room today on the YouTube channel. So after you're done listening to Lockdown Broncos, go check out the Bryce Callahan against the Las Vegas Raiders YouTube film review that we did as well. Cody Rourke, NFL. But with that said, Broncos country, coming up here in just a moment, we're going to get into our interview with Kyle Krabs, host of Lockdown Dolphins, to preview this Denver Broncos Dolphins matchup on Sunday. But before we do that, folks, I got to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Lockdown Broncos Crossover Thursday. It's our good friends over there at Pepsi, and this football season will be different. And Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, the Broncos will host the Miami Dolphins this Sunday, and Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the league of football watchers just like me. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi is made for those who play the game. It is made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. It is Crossover Thursday all across the Locked On NFL Network, and we have an AFC West versus AFC East divisional showdown. The Broncos hosting the Miami Dolphins, and I'm joined today by Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Dolphins, to talk about this Sunday's matchup between a team that I think a lot of people didn't expect to be where they're at versus a team that also a lot of people didn't expect to be where they're at. And this is a story of two different football teams. I talk about the Broncos and the Miami Dolphins. Kyle, great to talk with you as always, my man.
Likewise, good catching up. I know we chatted a little bit over the course of the summer, and now we're into the thick of the season, and like you said, kind of two teams trending in very different directions for this season. I still think the long-term forecast for both teams, there's plenty to be optimistic about, but not the script I think either team expected to find themselves in at this point in mid-November.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we talked during the offseason, before the NFL draft, we had a crossover just in the offseason, and nobody knew exactly what was going to happen, if Tua was going to take over at some point, if they were just going to roll with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And there was a lot of excitement about Drew Lock and the Denver Broncos, and it's almost like the excitement that I think that we had when we talked about it for Drew Lock and the Broncos has dipped down, and the excitement for the Miami Dolphins of Tua has raised up a little bit. So I want to focus on asking you some questions here about this matchup on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Looking into this matchup, I mean, there was a question at the time. I think a lot of people were like, why are the Dolphins benching Ryan Fitzpatrick for Tua? Because Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing well enough for them to still win football games. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden we started to see Tua mania, the excitement of having a young quarterback and also draft positioning, because the Dolphins do own the Houston Texans first round draft pick this year. So for me, my question to you is, after being able to watch Tua for 3 weeks on the football field, what has been your initial impression? We know that his debut, as you mentioned, was anticlimactic in a way, but the last couple of weeks, we've seen a little bit more from him.
Yeah, I think what's really stood out is some of the pre-snap alerts and RPOs that Miami, whether it was simply a safety count, as far as if they got too high safety, we're going to give the ball or not. You're seeing more and more of Tua come up out of the mesh point and throw the balls versus one-on-one. So they did it several times against the Chargers where they had soft coverage on the outside and they ran a 10-yard speed out with Jakeem Grant, and he comes up out of the mesh, running backs expecting the ball. Offensive linemen are double teaming and climbing to the second level, but it happened so fast that the ball's just out. And that was one of the really appealing parts of Tua Tagovailoa's game coming out of Alabama, was how good he was at the RPO type stuff. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, you saw they kind of tried to dip their toe into the water with it with Fitzpatrick, and it really just didn't work, to be honest yeah. with you. And then they're getting outgapped in the run game. So the opportunity to have a run call on the field and know that you can come out of that if they load the box and outgap you and throw the ball, I think it gives the Miami Dolphins a little bit more flexibility in a snap-by-snap basis. And then the red zone offense is the other thing with Tua Tagovailoa's accuracy. They were hitting about 57-58% of their red zone trips, converting them into touchdowns before the quarterback swap. And in the three games since, they're at 80% conversion rate, 8 out of 10. And one of those failed trips was a muff snap by Ted Karras that he bowling balled back and just didn't get off the ground. So the red zone offense has been much, much better under Tua.
Well, and you talked about Grant. I mean, he had a pretty good game against the Chargers, as we saw last week. He had a touchdown. And also, you mentioned the speed out. It's one of the things, too, I think that plays well to what the Miami Dolphins do offensively with Tua, is that they do have a quick passing game, something that he's very comfortable in. And I do want to applaud, based on watching the film this week, the last 3 weeks, on Tua and the Dolphins, I think Chan Gailey's done a very phenomenal job of kind of fitting and making the offense to the strengths of what Tua is able to do. I think he's only going to get a little bit more comfortable. But the question I have for you now, we know the offensive line for Miami is very young, but then you talk about you lose Myles Gaskin at the running back position. You lose Preston Williams as well. Who are the other guys? I mean, we know we can rely on Grant and obviously Devontae Parker, but who else can Tua rely on from the receiving department in this matchup, considering that they lose Preston Williams and Gaskin?
Well, it seemed as though Miami really wanted to get the tight ends involved against the Chargers, and some of that was each of the Chargers' three starting linebackers and their base defense were giving up opposing passer ratings in excess of 100 coming into the game. So they ran three tight end, 13 personnel at a higher rate and clipped like three times the rate of any of the game that they played thus far this season. So I think Mike Gesicki is a name that you have to watch. Tua has tried to keep him involved. Mike did not take the advantage with some of the targets that he got in week 10 against the Chargers, just because he didn't really come back and attack the football in the air. He was kind of fading or running away from Tua as he's running deep over routes and allowing defensive backs to come into the window and disrupt the pass, which for 6'5", 250, 255, you'd expect a little bit better results at the catch point. So I think that'll be a point of emphasis. But Jakeem Grant, Devontae Parker, they have involved less of the backs out of the backfield. Myles Gaskin, as you mentioned, was, I think, the third leading target receiver by the time he went out. And they've kind of just spaced that around and spread it around amongst Durham Smythe's getting some targets, one of their other tight ends. It's a community effort, and I think that's why they're trying to stay fairly low volume with the passing, and they actually ran the ball more than they passed it in week 10 against the Chargers. And if you play good defense and then you want to slow the game down and play possession game, which is what the Dolphins do because they trust their defense so much, they do take the ball, air out of the ball a little bit towards the end of the games.
Well, and we've seen Brian Flores just absolutely dial up some phenomenal game plans. I mean, you see a lot of cover zero now. I mean, six-man pressures, and everyone's locked up. And guess what? You can afford that luxury when you have guys like Xavier Howard and Byron Jones on the outside to be able to lock up on the outside. So for me, I think a big matchup to watch this week will be those guys against guys like Tim Patrick and Jerry Jeudy. To me, I think it's going to be very exciting to watch. But in terms of the defensive side of the ball and special teams, the Dolphins have been very spectacular in those two departments this year for them. And if they can get the offense going, they're going to be a legitimate threat. Now, right now, they're still contending for that AFC East divisional spot there with the Buffalo Bills. And New England's kind of creeping up there a little bit, but Miami's kind of been on the rise a little bit. In your opinion, what is it that you've seen from this defense so far this year on special teams that has really just made the biggest difference for them? I mean, they're one of the top teams right now in terms of total takeaways from a defensive unit. What is the formula that you say has probably been the most constant for them?
Yeah, so they very much subscribe to the bend, don't break mentality. So you're watching the Los Angeles Rams, Jared Goff finished with 380 yards against the Dolphins in But in the first half, he had four turnovers, and Miami jumps out to this big lead, and he got 150 passing yards over the final two possessions of the ballgame for the Rams after the game was well in hand. So they try to pressure you early on in first down or create a negative play, and they're really banking to get you in third and eight plus. So that way they can really bring that amoeba defense onto the field and try to play those games with you. And for every one in which it's a zero blitz and they bring six or seven, there's another where they play cover three and everybody bails out and they build the picket fence at the first down markers with the other five guys. And you've got one of the best ball hawks in football and Xavien Howard, who baited Justin Herbert into the throw that he took. And you review the all 22. And when the receiver, Mike Williams, put his foot in the ground on the interception that Xavien Howard had against the Chargers, Howard was already downhill. He knew to play the sticks. It's just that kind of smart, instinctual head games that they play with teams is really where they make their ends meet. So if you're trying to avoid that as Denver, you got to get into third and three, third and two. You got to avoid third and six plus.
That's been hard for the Broncos this year, and I'm sure you're going to have a lot of questions for me about the Broncos' struggles on offense. And like I mentioned, too, this is a Broncos offense that can't struggle the way that they have been against a team like Miami, because Brian Flores is very smart as is, but teams have had so much success by sending six players at the Broncos quarterback, whoever it may be this season. That's going to be a big question. And Kyle's actually going to get to flip the script here in just a moment. He's going to ask me about the Broncos side of things, where this team is at, coming up here in just a moment.
Kyle Krabs, Cody Rourke here of Locked On Dolphins and Locked On Broncos, continuing this crossover series. And Cody, ahead of week 11, the big question about the Denver Broncos is, of course, going to be centered around the quarterback position. With the injury to Drew Lock, the bruised ribs, it seems as though he's day to day. What's the temperature at this point in time, midweek here, for what we should expect to see for Denver? And is there an optimism or a hope that Drew Lock is able to play to try to bounce back from what was a really rough ball security outing against the Raiders in week 10?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think right now it's going to really be determined on how, when the Broncos return back to practice today, what it's going to be like. Yesterday at practice, he was a DNP. I mean, he stood off to the side with his helmet, didn't do anything. Brett Rippon, he got a majority of the first team reps for the Broncos there, and they're probably working in Jeff Driskel a little bit. But as of right now, I think really where we're going to see Drew Lock is how he practices today. If he's limited, there might be some optimism. But Broncos head coach Vic Fangio even said it, that he doesn't probably feel too comfortable putting Drew Lock in a game if he has limited reps all throughout the week in practice. So today's going to be a big telling sign. And if he misses two consecutive days, I think you can almost make the guarantee that probably Brett Rippon would get the start for the Broncos against Miami on Sunday. And look, Brett Rippon, he made his debut against another AFC East division opponent, the New York Jets. And outside of three interceptions, he did pretty good for the most part. He looked a lot more comfortable operating Pat Shurmur's offense. Now, granted, they didn't have Phillip Lindsay in that game. So now you still have Phillip Lindsay. You have Melvin Gordon. You don't have a guy like Cortland Sutton, but you still have Tim Patrick and Jerry Jeudy. So there's some chemistry that these guys have with one another already. So that bodes well to their favor. But like I said, the Broncos still need to figure out who their quarterback is of the future. And is it going to be Drew Lock? You want to be able to see that in these next seven games.
So, Cody, my next question as it pertains to Brett Rippon, who's a quarterback that I liked a fair amount as a potential late-round guy when he came out of Boise State. What was the biggest difference in the way he operated the Broncos' offense when he did get the start against the Jets and looked really good for three quarters until he had a couple turnovers in bunches late when it seemed like the Jets kind of caught on to some stuff versus what Drew Lock's done.
Yeah, well, Greg Williams was sending pressure because that was the formula that defensive coordinators had done, because the Broncos the previous week, they played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Todd Bowles just sent the house at the Broncos, and Brett Rypien came in that fourth quarter against Tampa Bay, and he started off, I believe it was 7-for-7, 8-for-8, and was quick and decisive, and Tampa Bay still blitzed the hell out of him. And that's one thing I think that the Jets did. They blitzed him, and he was good at recognizing pre-snap, okay, the blitz is coming from here. He understood where and timing on how to be able to turn his hips, get the ball out quickly. Drew Lock, on the other hand, when you watch him, it doesn't look like he's doing that. It looks like he's overthinking. He's staring down the first read a little bit too long. And that's something I've noticed on the film. But for Brett Rypien, I know it's a small sample size, but the decisiveness has probably been the biggest factor as to why I think the Broncos are comfortable with Brett, especially if he has to play against the Dolphins.
Now, Cody, when we started this segment in the crossover, we talked about what the expectations were for both of these teams in the offseason. And obviously, it hasn't gone to script for either one of these teams. What would you point to as the biggest catalyst for where things went off the rails for Denver, for what the expectations were versus the reality that we've seen through the first 10 weeks of the season?
You know, that's really tough to say. And I'd say one of the biggest elements was losing Von Miller before week one even happened. I mean, it was the week of the game, a few days before the game even happened. He has the injury. He's out for, you know, the entire season. There's a chance he could come back in the next 3 weeks. I mean, that's his plan. He's trying to. And then outside of that, losing Cortland Sutton, you're arguably your number one wide receiving target. Now you have a bunch of young guys that are still growing, getting valuable reps. Injuries have a little bit of a part to it. This is an offense that didn't get much time together. But then again, not many other offenses around the National Football League had time to get together as well, besides Tom Brady and the Buccaneers when they got together in Tampa, even though everything was quarantined. So I'd say for Denver, just their youth has really come back to bite them in the tail a little bit. Just execution all across the board. I mean, there's times where the Broncos, they've been competitive in almost every game, minus this Las Vegas Raiders game. And you can make the argument about the Tampa Bay game too, but they just look defeated against the Raiders. And losing Mike Purcell on the defensive line has been huge for them, because the Broncos in the two times out of the last 3 weeks have given up 200 total yards rushing by the opposing team, which you can't have that happen. And the Broncos passing secondary has been very, very strong, stronger than I thought it was going to be. And it's been surprising to see the drop off on the run defense, but that's because you're without Von Miller, you're without Mike Purcell, and you're also without Shelby Harris for the third consecutive week this week against the Dolphins.
As we look at this matchup specifically and the strengths of both teams and the weaknesses of both teams, and you talk specifically about the run defense, and that's not been an area of strength for the Dolphins. Dolphins, their blueprint has been to try to assemble big physical guys that can win at the A level, but where they really struggle is by securing the block and then climbing to the B level to really fit up on the linebacker. So how much of the issues for the Broncos in the run defense has been rooted in losing so many bodies that play along the defensive line versus, you know, is there opportunities there in your opinion for Miami to get up onto these linebackers and get fit up on the linebackers, which it's really seemed to be where they've been stuck in neutral with why they're failing to get the ball moving on the ground?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like just based on watching the film, I feel like the Broncos this year have been really good against the inside run, and it's really just been the outside run that's really hurt them. And it's a delayed counter where you're going to hit the counter step from the running back, you know, and what happens is, and what's been happening consistently is that teams have been trying to seal Bradley Chubb as the outside backer, trying to get to that next level. And then you have to hope that the wide receivers are doing a good job in their one-on-one blocking. That's really been the trend for the Broncos so far, where they've given up these big rushes. They've all been big runs to the outside. So they've done pretty decent for the most part on the interior run. They're very good at plugging the gaps. And a lot of that's attributed to Josie Jewell and also Alexander Johnson, who have really emerged as a very strong linebacking duo this year in the National Football League. Outside of that, too, you have Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons, who are also coming up as run support. They've been doing a really good job, but it's just the stuff to the outside. The Broncos have to be better off the edge. So I think there is an opportunity there. And one thing I've noticed is sometimes the Broncos, they'll come out in a double three techniques from the defensive tackles. And one of the things that teams have had success on is draw, right? So this is an opportunity, I think, for Miami with Matt Breda to be able to catch him with a draw, a delayed draw. That's something that has hurt the Broncos because it allows those defensive linemen to really kind of be shucked inside by the O-line. They're going to double team down initially and then climb to the next level. You mentioned the A level to the B level. That delayed draw right there really hurts the Broncos because the linebackers are reading for pass. Here comes the draw, and then they're a little bit late stepping up. That's been something that we've seen with Denver this year.
Cody, my last question. If you're the Broncos and you're building the game plan, who is the X factor player on either side of the football that hey, you've got to have a huge game if we're going to pull out a win on Sunday.
If I'm the Broncos, it's got to be Phillip Lindsay. Four carries in the last game against the Las Vegas Raiders. That is inexcusable for the type of player who has the talent that Phillip Lindsay does. And the Broncos, they were only down 10-6 at halftime. That's no point to abandon the run game, but the Broncos did that. And it didn't help that their only possession in the third quarter against the Raiders, it went from -3 yards and they were off the field with under 56 seconds. That right there is not a good formula, especially against a team like the Raiders who control the time of possession. I think with Miami's struggles right now running the football, I think it bodes well to where the Broncos maybe don't find themselves in that situation, but I think the Broncos have to get Phillip Lindsay involved. Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler, those guys have been X factors. They've been having success, but you got to get the run game going or else none of it really matters.
Kyle Krabs, Cody Roark, Locked On Dolphins, Locked On Broncos. This crossover series is finished, but the fun is just beginning because the Dolphins and Broncos play at 4 p.m. Eastern this Sunday.
A lot of great insight from Kyle Krabs over there at the Draft Network, also the host of Locked On Dolphins. Looking forward to this matchup on Sunday. We're going to figure out a little bit more about Drew Lock's status as the week progresses. As we talked about in the crossover, what Drew Lock does today is going to go a long ways into determining his status for Sunday. Tomorrow is going to be Friday, so that's going to be another area that we got to look at in terms of if he practices. And if he doesn't, you can almost assume that Brett Rypien will get the start on Sunday for the Broncos here as Drew Lock deals with a rib injury. But Broncos country, that'll do it for today's episode, Locked On Broncos, here on your favorite podcast provider. Just a reminder, you can get us every single day, not just once a week. We want you to listen 5 times per week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. If you already do so, mile high salute to you. If not yet, if you only listen to 1 or 2 episodes per week, you got to make that to daily, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 5 episodes per week, fresh, featuring the local experts on the biggest stories, the latest news around the Broncos in Dove Valley, and an objective point of view and film coverage you can get only here, Locked On Broncos, exclusively by me, Cody Rourke. Broncos country, appreciate you guys as always. Tomorrow's episode of Locked On Broncos, we go through the numbers, the tail of the tape, which key matchups do the Broncos have to win in their one-on-ones on Sunday in order to have a chance to come out on top against this very aggressive Miami Dolphins defense. You can get that on tomorrow's episode, Locked On Broncos.